This is WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. And this is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for July 24th, 2008. Today, a conversation between local artist and activist Robert Shetterly and Terry Blanton, an activist who will be the keynote speaker at the grandstand stage at the Full Circle Fair on Saturday afternoon from 2:30 to 3:30.
I just want to say how excited I am that you are, going to be talking to us today, and also that you're going to be coming up here next week and be the keynote speaker at the ERU Fair. That's terrific.
Well, thank you.
So are you at home in Berea?
I am. I'm in Berea, Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's my new home. I actually grew up in Harlan County, which is in the southeastern part of the state.
I know. You grew up in is it pronounced Dayhoit?
Yes.
It sounds like a fascinating and beleaguered place.
It is. It is quite a fascinating place.
Well, I want to go back a minute. I want to introduce you a little bit more properly.
Okay.
And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to talk about the primary issue about mountaintop removal. And then once we've talked about that and sort of established what's going on down there, then go back to your roots a little bit more about Dayhoit and how you got into this and how personally, you know, your life was impacted.
Okay. I also have, you know, some actions that people in your state can take.
That's what I wanted to end up with today, was
cool.
Talking exactly about that. I mean, because, you know, a lot of people think what goes on in eastern Kentucky and southern West Virginia is their problem and not everybody else's, but as I'm sure you'll make clear, this is everybody's problem.
Yes.
Well, I'm Rob Shetterly, and I'm in the studios of WERU in Orland, Maine. And today we have the great honor and privilege of speaking with Terry Blanton, who will be the keynote speaker at the WERU Full Circle Fair. And Terry will be coming from Berea, Kentucky to speak here, and I just want to tell you a little bit about her. She has often been called the Erin Brockovich of the social justice movement within the Appalachian coalfields for her tireless efforts to protect our headwater streams. And, excuse me, I'm putting on my glasses, and to ultimately move eastern Kentucky towards a more sustainable future beyond coal. Terry is a Harlan County native and survivor of the federal Superfund site, of a federal Superfund site. Early in her activist career, she spent her days educating communities about adverse health effects due to their exposure to the chemicals in the local drinking water. She is currently a fellow with the Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, KFTC, and concentrates her efforts on the campaign to end mountaintop removal mining in eastern Kentucky and help create a sustainable and survivable energy future. She is also the vice president of Kentucky Riverkeepers, which is a member of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Waterways Alliance. She is on the steering committee of the Alliance for Appalachia. The Alliance for Appalachia is a collaboration of 13 organizations in central Appalachia working to bring an end to mountaintop removal. She is also the 2003 recipient of the Helen M. Lewis Community Service Award from the Appalachian Studies Association and traveled that same year to Brazil as a member of the U.S. delegation to the World Social Forum. And I think I want to end the introduction by reading the first paragraph of a book called Lost Mountain by Eric Reese. And this is the first paragraph of a chapter about Terry Blanton. And Eric said, "Coal operators are not an easily intimidated bunch, but there is probably no one in the state of Kentucky who rattles their cage like a 48-year-old grandmother named Terry Blanton, a prime mover in the Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, the state's largest social justice organization. Blanton has spent the last two decades helping coalfield residents fight the corporations that have turned so much of eastern Kentucky into what she calls a toxic dump. One can get a real education in environmental corruption and smash-mouth class warfare by tracking the past 20 years of Blanton's life." Well, how does that sound, Terry?
I'm tired just hearing about me.
It's a lot of effort you've put in. Why don't you describe a little bit about what you're up against there in terms of mountaintop removal. What it is for you. I mean, the thing in Maine is that I mean, what I run into is that, by and large, most people know nothing about it and also know even less about people like you or Judy Bonds in West Virginia who are, you know, making this good fight.
Well, you know, mountaintop removal sounds like really nice. It's more like mountain range removal. And when you think about Appalachia, they're the oldest mountains on Earth, you know, and they're home to the most, one of the most diverse hardwood forests in the world, a deciduous rainforest second only in biodiversity to the rainforest in South America. And we are blowing up these mountains at such a rapid pace and reducing them to rubble. There's places in eastern Kentucky you can go to that you get up to the top, what should have been the top of the mountains, and you're in a mesa. It looks like you're in Montana driving along the high prairie. So they blow up the most ancient mountains on Earth, reducing them to rubble, and then hydro-seed them with not with invasive grasses, not even grasses that are they don't feed anything. Nothing won't eat them. One of the grasses that they use the most is called Chinese lespediza, and Chinese lespediza is also creeping into the healthy forest, destroying the forest that's not destroyed by mountaintop removal.
Well, why would they, and why aren't they doing, you know, deep mining like they used to do? Why mountaintop removal?
Well, I think they've got at most of the coal that they can get to, and they're getting the smaller seams at the top. I actually am a part of a lawsuit with the National Sierra Club against the Army Corps of Engineers for violation of the Clean Water Act for issuing valley fill permits, and we did some inspections the other day on this mine site. And this new mine is like 4,000 acres, and it's surrounded by probably 20,000 acres of just high prairie, you would have to call it. And the coal seams are like 8 inches thick. And then the next coal seam, that would be number 7, and the next was number 8. And it was just barely 30 inches thick, and it wasn't even pure coal. It had other strands of, like, slate and things running through it. And then the bottom seam was, like, 12 inches. So it's the cheapest, easiest way for them to get to the coal is just blow it up and shove the tops of the mountains over into the valleys. And in Kentucky alone, we've buried about 800 miles of headwater streams with this type of mining.
Well, a minute ago you used the term valley fill. What do you mean by that?
Well, like, you have a mountain, and then you have a valley, and then you have a mountain. So they blow up the mountain and shove it into the valleys that's between the mountains. So you no longer have a mountain and a valley and a mountain and valley. You just have like a high, flat spot.
What happened to environmental regulations that would have prohibited dumping a whole mountain into a stream?
Well, they've been weakened. You know, the first laws that we ever had around strip mining, some people want to call it surface mining, but it's strip mining, was in the 70s, and we just celebrated last year the 30 years of SMACRA, which is the Surface Mining Reclamation and Control Act. And when President Carter signed it into law at that point, he said this doesn't go far enough. And it's been weakened and challenged and weakened and challenged ever since. And this last administration, in the last 8 years, we've went back 30 years in environmental regulations. And what protections that we did have under the Clean Water Act and also under SMACRA has been challenged. And one of the things that I would like to ask the people of Maine to help me with is one of your representatives or one of your congressmen actually sits on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, which is a subcommittee of Water Resources and Environment.
Is this Tom Allen or Mike Michoud?
No, Tom Allen is actually already a co-sponsor of H.R. 2169.
And it, explain what that is.
Okay, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, we had lawsuits because we feel that burying streams is a violation of the Clean Water Act, and we were winning some cases in some courts, and the Bush administration changed the wording, did an executive rule change that says it is no longer coal waste. It is fill, and fill is legal under the Clean Water Act. So what this bill does is actually change the wording back to make it illegal for them to put the fuel into the streams.
Well, by actually changing that wording back and then enforcing it, would that in effect stop mountaintop removal because they wouldn't be able to, no place to put the mountain then?
It would limit the amount of mountain that they could destroy. I mean, before they would, like, mine some, put it back, mine some, put it back. And now, you know, we have 10,000 acre mines. And it would help deal with this problem.
So what you're asking is that the Mainers would get in touch with Mike Michaud in his office.
Yes.
To make him a co-signer of this bill.
Yeah, to co-sponsor this bill. And it's really important for him to get on it, considering he is one of the people that's on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee hearing this bill.
Well, I hope when you're up here and speaking at the fair that you will bring that up, because I think you'll be talking to a lot of activist people who will want to do that.
I will, and I'll try to either send to you ahead of time. Maybe we can get a petition signed or have some kind of pamphlets that we could hand out asking people to take this action, asking him to co-sponsor this bill. Right now we're up to about 145 co-sponsors.
Oh, that's terrific.
But so it would just put the wording back into the, you know, make it go back to co-waste instead of co-fuel. And so we have been attacked as far as our water on every level. In early 2000, before the Clinton administration went out, we had won a lawsuit. Unfortunately, you know, they always want to say environmentalists suing someone, but unfortunately we have to sue the regulatory agencies to get them to do their job.
Right.
And one of our suits actually brought about an environmental impact study on mountaintop removal, and it wasn't released until the Bush administration came into office. And when the Bush administration came into office, the three things that came down on the draft EIS was eliminate the stream buffer zone rule, which that is another law under SMACRA, which says that you can't mine within 100 feet of a stream.
What's SMACRA?
Surface Mining Reclamation and Control Act.
Mm-hmm.
It's the law that has to do with strip mining,
right.
Surface mining. So you'll hear me say SMACRA a lot. That's the federal law that oversees strip mining. And other states have primacy over that law, but they have to... It has to be enforced to the intent of SMACRA. And then you have the Federal Office of Surface Mining that oversees it.
Well, I know in Kentucky you've been working really hard on getting a Stream Saver bill passed.
That's my baby.
Yeah. Well, tell us about that and where it is today and whether you think it's going to be passed.
Well, for 4 years we came up with the Stream Saver bill because we feel that on the federal level we have no protection. So maybe we could get some protection on the state level. And unfortunately, it goes before the Natural Resources Committee in the House every time. And the Natural Resources in the House, in the State House of Kentucky, is more like the watchdog for the coal industry rather than the environment. And it hasn't been called up. And so one of the co-sponsors of the bill is actually in my district. And he is the chair of the Appropriations and Revenue Committee. And last year, he actually put in a bill in his committee, which it was the budget year in Kentucky, so all the media is around and everybody's all excited. And he introduced a camel and sales use tax on camel feed and inserted the Stream Saver bill, and we had a hearing, and we got 13 votes. It took 15 to get it out of committee.
Yeah.
But it's still alive, it's still in the media, and people are still talking about it.
Yeah, it will come up again when? In the early next year, right?
Yes.
In January, February or something.
Yes, in the next legislative session.
Well, tell us a little bit more about, in terms of mountaintop removal, the scope of the problem in West Virginia and Kentucky. I mean, how many mountains are we talking about?
Well, you know, there's some people say 400 mountains, some people say 700 mountains, and Dr. Matt Watson from Appalachian Voices actually counted the peaks at one point, and he said there was over 2,000 peaks destroyed.
Oh, my goodness.
And it is extremely out of control right now. It's running really rampant considering that price of coal is up so high.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that I'm in the struggle as well as everyone else across the nation to say no new coal-fired power plants, which I think is very important. But I also read an article in the newspaper back in November that said the export from Appalachian coal was up like 19% mm-hmm. to other countries.
Well, I noticed that when the president was in Japan recently for the G8 conference and they were talking about climate change, one thing that came up was, it seemed to be one of the great hopes that they were pushing towards was clean coal. Is there such a thing as clean coal?
There's no such thing as clean coal. Clean coal is just a way for the industry and the coal industry and the power industry to keep business as usual. You know, if they clean up what comes out of the stacks, it still doesn't make burning coal clean. It still doesn't make the extraction end of coal clean. And then what do you do with the waste? Coal is deadly from the extraction end all the way to the burning end. And even, you know, they say that it's going to be clean coal if they can capture the carbon that comes out of the stacks and then sequester it into the ground. It's not a proven technology, and it's just a hoax to make people believe that we can go forward with coal as usual.
Well, what is the relationship between coal and climate change?
Well, coal is the number one producer of carbon, CO2, into the air. So it's the greatest link there is.
Yeah, and so, I mean, obviously the problem is not just in, you know, I know we burn enough coal to produce, what, something a little over 50% of all the electricity in this country, but it's also being used more and more extensively in China and India and other places too, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was recently, or last year was in California on the coast, and they were talking about how at one point they got this huge smog come across off the ocean, and it was actually from China, from the burning of coal in China, and they had this wave of coal soot and smog that came through. But, you know, we're supposed to be this really developed nation. Shouldn't we be taking the lead and moving this world forward in a more positive direction?
What is What is the relationship between the coal industry and mountaintop removal and jobs in Kentucky and West Virginia?
Well, you know, every time that we say enforce the law, whether it, no matter how big or how small it is, to the coal industry, their line is always, you're going to shut down coal mining in Kentucky, coal jobs are the only jobs there is in eastern Kentucky. They have, you know, it's just one industry and that's it. So people are really afraid of losing their jobs, and they always threaten with losing their jobs. And I would say today, Robert, that it's almost a civil war between the people in Appalachia, those that are fighting for the protection of their home and those that's fighting for the protection of their jobs.
Hmm. Well, don't fewer and fewer people have jobs with the coal industry, because isn't mountaintop removal mostly mechanized?
Oh, yeah, and less than, I seen the number the other day, which it's increased a couple thousand, but less than 18,000 people across the state of Kentucky actually works in coal.
Hmm.
And that's from the CEOs of the businesses down to the people that's shoveling.
And that's like, what, maybe 10% of what it used to be when people were working in underground mines?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back a little bit and go back to, say, maybe 1981 when you moved from Michigan back to Kentucky and first gotten involved in this movement. What happened then?
Well, I moved back to Dehoyt, which is my hometown, and that's where my family lived. And I was raising two small children by myself, and this is a community that my family had been in for three or four generations. And I found out at that point that in 1989, this company had dumped toxic waste onto the ground from 1951 to 1987. Hmm. They sold the company as environmentally clean to a local industry and walked away. And then, with further investigation, we found out that we were drinking over 200 semi-volatile and volatile organics in our drinking water. And what was really striking was in the middle of the 70s, during the oil embargo, in a coal-producing county, they put in a fuel-burning furnace, and they trucked in transformer oil from the plants across the nation and burned them in my community 24/7 for about 5 years to to rid themselves of transformer oil. And if you burn PCBs, then you get dioxin and dioxin furans, which is the most deadliest chemical there is.
Yeah, it's a very serious carcinogen, right?
Yes, it is very serious. And most people in my community die of cancer by the time they're about 55 years old.
So what did you try to do to stop this?
Well, the first thing, I guess the biggest problem is educating myself about what I was exposed to, and then educating the community. And we had what was called, so the company that willfully and intentionally polluted my community for 40 years or 50 years, no, it was 30, excuse me, 30-some years, is now the primary responsible party. They call themselves the PRP. So now the PRP is in my community, and they decide where to test and what to test, and then the cleanup plan. And unfortunately, no one's looking at raw data because the EPA has got their hands full, and if they've got somebody that says, oh, it's my responsibility, I'll clean it up. So, you know, I at one point I was almost a chemist. I knew all these chemicals and, you know, how many people would die out of 100,000 if they drank it or if they ingested it.
Well, were your own children sick from this?
Yes, and my children, we still suffer from the effects of this. I mean, it's not something that goes away, especially my daughter, who's the mother of my two grandchildren. She suffers from multiple chemical sensitivity, so she gets sick quite a bit. And then I'm raising one of my nieces because my sister was back in Dayhoit after being out for a couple years, and she was digging in my dad's yard. And then later that evening, she had an allergic reaction that put her into a cardiac arrest, and she died, and she was about 43.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
it's a little scary.
Yeah. Well, when you look at everything that's gone on in the last 20 years in your struggle with this, have there been some successes?
Well, you always have to celebrate the successes. I saved this dream last week, or a couple weeks ago. The mindset that I was talking about earlier, we were fighting for a stream called Marion Branch, and the coal industry said that the stream didn't exist, and we actually went out and found the stream and found that it was a perennial stream, and it had life in it, so therefore they had to take it off of their permit, or else we were going to sue them for a violation of the Clean Water Act.
Wow, that's terrific.
I think the most important thing is watching community members develop and speak for themselves and realize that they can speak for themselves and they have a voice.
Well, I think it's terrific what you'll be doing. Let me just go back a second and just say that I'm speaking with Terry Blanton, who will be the keynote speaker at the WERU Full Circle Fair on Saturday, July 26th in Blue Hill. And we've been talking about mountaintop removal in eastern Kentucky, where she's from. And I want to ask you one last question, Terry. Why is this important to Mainers? What happens in West Virginia and Kentucky?
Well, we're all connected, and we all live downstream or downwind. And global warming, no one is an outsider to global warming. And, you know, you are affected. You live on the coast. What happens if we continue to burn fossil fuels as we're doing today? And what happens when the oceans start rising? Mm-hmm. You know, how is that going to affect you? And you know, there is this site on KFTC's website called Know Your Connection, and you can put in your zip code, and you can see that the coal that you're burning to keep your lights on and your electricity and your air conditioners running actually comes from Kentucky and West Virginia.
Why don't you give a couple of those websites? I know that there's, besides the KFT site, there's the I Love Mountains site. And
yes, ilovemountains.org.
Yep.
And on ilovemountains.org, you can go to a site called Know Your Connection, and you just put your zip code in it, and it will take you back to the power company that you get your electricity from, and then back to the mine site. And some of the mine sites that are connected to Maine actually comes from eastern Kentucky and West Virginia.
And people can see pictures there, can't they, of
they can.
What this looks like?
They can.
And speaking of pictures, I want to tell people that Terry Blanton is going to be my next portrait in my Americans to Tell the Truth series. That's the first time I've interviewed somebody before she was a portrait, but this is going to be a wonderful honor to meet you and have you in Maine.
I would just like to tell you the scope of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I did an interview with a reporter who's writing up a report on post-mining land use in Kentucky. And in the past 4 years, there's been 236,000 acres strip mined in Kentucky alone. You know, that's 380-some square miles of land destroyed forever.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they claim that they reclaim the land. And as you mentioned earlier, it just really is rubble and will probably be rubble forever. But I think when you put together the land in Kentucky and West Virginia, it's an area the size of the state of Delaware.
Yes.
That is decimated.
Yes. And then the runoff, because once you take the coal from the earth and the air and the water mixes, then you have what's called acid mine drainage. And also, they've found on these huge valley fields that there's a lot of selenium runoff. So all the heavy metals that's buried within the earth is actually being broken up, and it's leaching out into the waters. And it doesn't stay in eastern Kentucky or West Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the streams in the most part of the eastern Kentucky runs into the Kentucky River, to the Ohio River, to the Mississippi, to the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, there's a long path that this water is taking.
Yeah, I mean, that whole area is one of the most important environmental systems in the whole country, and everything is affected by it.
Yes. Some people describe the Appalachian Mountains as the lungs of the East. And if you think over 1 million acres of the most diverse hardwood, some of the most diverse hardwood forest in the world reduced to rubble.
Terry, we are running out of time for this interview, but I just want to also mention one other thing quickly, is that the Peninsula Peace and Justice in Blue Hill will be showing the film Black Diamonds on Friday evening, the 25th, and Terry will be there to actually talk about the what's in that film, and if you're interested in meeting her, please come and see that movie then. Terry Blanton, thank you so much for doing this, and we are very excited that you're going to be here in Blue Hill next weekend for the ERU Fair and giving the keynote address.
Okay, thank you.
That was award-winning local artist and activist Robert Shetterly talking with Terry Blanton. Terry will be the keynote speaker at the WERU Full Circle Fair this Saturday afternoon from 2:30 to 3:30 at the Grandstand Stage. If you'd like to volunteer at the Full Circle Fair or just want more information, give us a call at 469-6600 or go online to our website at weru.org. That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can reach us by emailing news@weru.org. Please put Radioactive in the subject line. All of our locally produced news and public affairs programs are archived at our website, weru.org, so you can download them and listen whenever it's convenient for you. Stay tuned for Hightower coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and as always, a night of great music here on your community radio station, WERU.